Because I can control the weather, they call me Storm.
Welcome to This Week in Nerd News, your one-stop shop for all of the pop culture you may have missed this week, brought to you by the Black Nerd Problems Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Victoria Vertine.
I'm your host, Keith Reekleville.
It's been a hot minute since you and I recorded together. How you doing, Keith?
I'm doing good. It definitely has been a minute. People in this podcast have known I am very wary to overhype things, but I managed to watch both Dune and Dune 2 in the same day, actually, now I think about it. As you may remember, Dune 1 came out in 2021. We're recording this in 24. I had not seen the movie yet and honestly hadn't really planned to, primarily because people close to me who are seeing it when it came out gave me mild reviews of it. And I'm like, okay, it's super long. I'm not going into that for a mild mid-movie, you know? Mm-hmm. But I must say, I think I may have actually had the optimal viewing experience for Dune because I basically watched the first movie, which the critiques that I heard of it are valid for sure, where people, the main thing that I was hearing from, especially in my circles, was that it's a movie where a lot of things and nothing happen at the same time. And that's primarily because there's a lot of world building and lore dumping and establishing character backstory, that stuff that has to happen.
Correct, yeah.
Before you get to the stuff that happens in part two. Now, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. part two has that stuff too. And I love it because I also love political intrigue and all that kind of stuff and like political drama type stuff. So that element is still there, but there's a lot more action happening in this story in part two. But before I go into like the actual like spoiler-free review, because again, the movie just came out, just give people a quick update. So far, as of this recording, this movie is smashing it in the box office so far, globally and both like in the US or North America specifically. So as of now, globally, it has just shy of $180 million in the box office around the world, which is great news for studios that made it, which in this case would be Warner Brothers and Legendary Entertainment, because they spent a combined $290 million to both produce and promote this film. And just to break that down, they spent $190 million to make it, which you can see when you watch the movie, honestly. And they spent another $100 million to promote it in all the many ways they did, which is probably why it's so infectious, got into my world the way it did this time around. For context, though, Dune that came out in 2021, it only made $402 million globally. And I say only, despite that being a huge amount of money, because they could have made more in a different situation, because this came out in 2021. People weren't going to the movie theater at all anymore. So they did a simultaneous release, at least in the US, where they did it on HBO Max, or formerly known as HBO Max, now just known as Max, and also in movie theaters. So it made a lot of money overseas, but it didn't make too much money here in the States. This time around, though, off to a great start. And as a study that I saw this past week said, I think out of the 60 highest grossing movies of a certain time frame, I think it was a few years here, only 10 of them weren't sequels, unfortunately. So, I mean, yeah, sequels make money, and there's a reason why they keep on making sequels. Now, before I go on too far, Victoria, have you seen it yet?
I have not seen the second one yet. I saw the first one, and I have read some of the books, but not all of them.
Have you read Dune and Dune Messiah?
Man, I'm old. This was back when I was raiding my mom's bookshelf. I think I was like 12 or 13, so maybe?
Okay, but like, first of all, you've seen the first movie.
Yeah, I know what's
but
going
even better,
on.
You know the IP, stuff, right? So like, do you have any thoughts about like the first film and the translations for what you know and read and all that stuff before we go into the new one?
Dune's place as a space opera, right? Which is really what it is.
Yeah.
Is huge. And I think that adapting Dune was always going to be difficult, right? It is so much more complicated than Star Wars. And like, Star Wars is complicated and a huge, expansive world, right? And it doesn't put a finger to Dune's world, right? And the world building and the interconnected stories and the timelines and like, there's so much going on. And there have been attempts before to adapt this, and they happened. Some of them, not all of them, happened. And I think that this one is the closest. I think that it gives the feeling, even if it doesn't do all of the things. So in the same way that Peter Jackson's adaptations of The Lord of the Rings are not 100% accurate to the books, right? There's no way that you could be. They are still a good representation, and you get the feeling of the world that Tolkien built. And I feel that way about this Dune. It is not 100% accurate. I'm sure that there are going to be things that some people are going to be like, no, that specific thing was really necessary. Why wasn't it in there? But overall, it feels like Frank Herbert's world.
There are different philosophies on what adaptation's purposes are, right? And I think at this phase in my life, I'm of the belief that an adaptation serves two main purposes in order to like check off the boxes and be a success. That is to honor the original or previous incarnation, and also to not add to it, but to support it in a sense. And sometimes that might mean changing the story up and finding ways to make things cleaner than they were before, or make more sense than they were before, and all that. Because again, another competing philosophy of adaptations is, no, this should be the original property. As close to it as humanly possible, it should be that. And if it's not that, it's something different and it's a failure. And I do feel like as viewers, we do tend to fall too much into that latter camp when it comes to being critical of things. Because if your first criticism is, oh, it's not that, that's valid. Sometimes that needs to go a step further and go, okay, it's not what I was expecting, but let me see if it's still something of value, right? And like, there are many adaptations we've had over time that have or have not gone there. Like, I'll go ahead and put my like, put my neck out there as a person who like talks about content. I didn't hate the Cowboy Bebop adaptation once I was able to tell myself, okay, this isn't Cowboy Bebop. This is just a random space action series, and that's fine. Is what it is. And when I was expecting to be Cowboy Bebop, I was furious. And I was like, what is happening here? I don't know what's going on. But then once I said like, okay, you know what? John Cho is fun. There's a lot of cool stuff happening here in Lasers. Like, that works. And that, so that may be the case of Dune too. And the reason why I say that is because one of the first things that stuck out to me here is that Dune Part 1 and Dune Part 2 are based on the first Dune novel. But like, you could tell making these movies, they were like, we're doing a trilogy. There's no way around it. Because there are just so many stories involved that they blend together the ending of the novel that based on people I've talked to and the research I've done, where they combine, they like either expedite plots that will take place in the sequel book called Dune Messiah to introduce them, like introduce those plot threads so that they could carry into a film organically, or they like cut things short that would have happened in this book already as far as relationships developing in certain ways or stages that they get to and all that. But all that being the case, I love this movie. So again, I watched Dune Part 1, and once you get, again, I love political intrigue. Once you get through all of the lore and backstory and politics of it all, it's a very straightforward story, essentially, of like fighting for power and like oppression and all these other things and stuff like that, and where you fit into it. Dune Part 2 definitely falls on most themes, but to a different level, about how, about attaining power and what you do once you get close to that power and what it makes about you and stuff. With that being said, I do need to let a lot of people out here realize, as much as you're gonna like watch this movie and maybe hype it up to people, don't tell on yourselves. Media literacy is at an all-time low, has become a quote thrown around a lot lately. I won't even go that far. I'm just go ahead and say that I feel like people might miss some common themes here. And they, and like, without going in too far into detail, like, rooting for certain people to do certain things is very immoral. Like, and it may or may not be there yet, but like, the writing's on the wall, and like, you should see it coming. So if you're rooting for these things to happen, you might want to examine a little bit. But like, on the other hand though, I don't mind you outing yourselves, because we know who you are that way. So we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, but overall though, I would definitely give this movie probably like a 9, if not a 9.5 out of 10. If that's the rating system we're going to use, it changes, we'll see. But like, I mean, it's definitely better than the first one, like for sure. And I like the first one.
That is a great place to take a break, and then we'll come back with some more Masters and Classics. And we're back. So I mentioned earlier that I thought Dune was a great place to start today, because Dune is one of those originators, I guess I would say. Like, when we think about the kind of legacy, I guess I would say, of sci-fi specifically, and then kind of some of the sub-genres of that, Dune is up there, right? I have very fond memories of going to the used bookstore back home, and I know exactly where the science fiction section is, and there's just a wall of Dune books, right? Along with some others. And some of those would be William Gibson books. And so in segment two, I wanted to talk about some other masters and classics, some other kind of originators in different spaces, namely William Gibson in sci-fi and John Waters in, oh man, I guess general cult classic, and very specifically the queer kind of space, queer community, queer filmmaking. So let's bounce off of Dune and we'll stick in that space for a bit with William Gibson. So William Gibson wrote a lot of things, but two of his more well-known books are The Difference Engine, which is seen as one of the first steampunk type books, and The Neuromancer, which was actually his debut novel and was seen as the first cyberpunk story, really. When we look at, again, kind of the history of cyberpunk, all roads go back to The Neuromancer by William Gibson. It won a Nebula Award, a Philip K. Dick Award, a Hugo Award. It was all that and a bag of chips. And it has now been picked up for a 10-episode series on Apple Plus from Graham Rowland and J.D. Dillard. Now, we've talked about Apple Plus before, and I've gone back and forth about, there's always like one or two things. I think my grocery basket is full now. I think there are enough things in the Apple Plus basket that Apple TV Plus, I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. But there's enough things in that basket that I think I'm gonna have to do it at least for a little while until I get through these shows. Because before we had The Neuromancer, we had the Foundation series, which is also one of those old school classic sci-fis. It's based on Isaac Asimov. So they are just really leaning hard into this. The Foundation series is on season 3 and has been doing absolutely amazing. So I'm not surprised that they picked up The Neuromancer, and I'm really excited to see how they're going to adapt this very early cyberpunk, anti-corporate, hacker-led universe. I think that will be super cool. So I'm excited about that. Anything on that before I take a very steep turn?
I'm actually kind of worried about what's about to happen here and everything. But so far, this all sounds wonderful for sure. Like, actually, like, in my own nerdy interest way, like, I love watching when things get picked up and everything, and then actually adaptations actually happen. Mm-hmm. Like, there are like a good 5 or 6 books that I've read over the past decade that I know are owned by different studios that I'm constantly searching for news on.
Right.
So this is all going to be good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Are you ready for the switch?
As ready as I will be.
Okay. All right. So, while all of this is happening, while we've got Asimov and Heinlein and Dune and The Neuromancer, we've got all of these different things happening in the sci-fi space, over in Baltimore, we have this quite queer thing happening with a man named John Waters, who I have seen the term iconoclastic filmmaker used quite often, and it fits so well. John Waters is a very specific individual, and his films are on the NSFW side of edgy, often, right? They've got a lot of going on. They're often highly controversial. And that controversy is sometimes very, I guess I would say, obvious, right? It's not really sophomoric humor in the way that you think of kind of like a National Lampoon kind of thing, but it is obvious in that way. Sometimes it's body humor, things like that. But there's always a through line of political controversy as well. And when I mention that John Waters is an icon in the queer community, that is because a lot of his main characters, and I would go so far even to say his muses, were drag queens. Divine and John Waters were inseparable for years, right? Everything they did together when it came to these movies. And so some of the movies that you might know are Polyester, Crybaby, which was also turned into a musical, and of course, Hairspray, which was also turned into a musical and then a musical film. And Divine was the originally portrayed Edna Turnblad, who was portrayed by John Travolta in the musical film. So that's kind of the realm of John Waters. And why this is coming up now is because the last film that John Waters made was in 2004, but he's back. So he is back with a new film. It is called Liar Mouth, and it is about kind of this con woman who's always lying about everything and then meets a person who is just kind of weird and kooky enough that it makes her start telling the truth and what that kind of does. It is an original novel by John Waters that he is now adapting into a movie. And the news that we got this week was that Aubrey Plaza has joined the cast as the role of the woman who is the liar mouth. So that is exciting. I think that Aubrey Plaza makes so much sense in the John Waters verse, I guess I would say. Like, those two seem like they would work really, really well together. So I'm glad that it sounds like she pursued this part very, very hard. And I'm glad that she did that. And I am excited to see this new offering and what a John Waters movie looks like after two decades. I think that's really exciting. So yeah, that's what I've got.
Yeah, so to clarify, it's been 20 years since John Waters has come out with a movie.
Come out with his own movie. Yeah, he's done some kind of acting and, you know, appearances on like Drag Race, things like that. I think he's hosting a show that's kind of, I would put it in kind of an Elvira type kind of show, but not actually making his own films in the way that he used to. And so, yeah, this is his first film in 20 years.
So I do appreciate the warning you gave me to begin all this, because that definitely was a pivot.
Yes. I feel like you did a really good job, Keith, of giving kind of like general advice and maybe some warnings for folks who were thinking about watching Dune. In a similar way, if you haven't watched John Waters, maybe spend some time on YouTube before you fully commit to like go into a theater or something, because it will either be totally your thing or not at all your thing. There will be no in-betweens.
That's a good way to go about it, I'd say, because like, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing you want to experience in public. Mm-mm. For the first time. Mm-mm. Right?
Nope.
Definitely not. Really, that's not how you want to do that whatsoever. So yeah, take Victoria's advice to do your homework in general, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Be informed.
And with that, we'll head to our patented, not patented lightning round. So to start us off, in a recent interview with The Verge, Crunchyroll president Rahul Purini said that the company may continue to acquire other anime companies now that the Funimation merger is finally settling down and getting to the end of the technical legal red tape. And which makes things a bit odd because, as we know, Crunchyroll is a combination of Sony Entertainment Group and Aniplex there in Japan. And Sony, which owns PlayStation, just announced that PlayStation was going to lay off a total of 900 employees throughout its global enterprise this past week. And on top of that, it was followed up with the announcement that Electronic Arts, commonly known as EA, will be laying off approximately 670 employees from its global infrastructure as well, signaling that the hard times in the video game industry don't seem to be getting better, at least when it comes to a work employment standpoint, despite the massive success that we're seeing in the industry as it grows and more games. And lastly, to end on a good note, we just had the latest version of the Anime Awards, which is another sign that anime is becoming even more beloved and respected in entertainment medium here in the US, but also in the world, just given some of the names that we had there in attendance to be presenters, and which would include Bong Joon-ho of Parasite and Snowpiercer fame. We also got to see an appearance of longtime anime fan Mercedes Varnado, formerly known as Sasha Banks, a professional wrestler, and my personal fave, we got to see Meg Thee Stallion present the award for Anime of the Year, which went to none other than Jujutsu Kaisen. So yeah, anime's turning the corner, folks. It's wonderful to see. And if you want to hear more from the Black Nerd Problems Broadcasting Network, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. That was this week in nerd news. Tune in next week for more pop culture updates. Once again, this is your host, Keith Reed Cleveland.
And I'm your host, Victoria Bertine.
Feel free to like, comment, subscribe, and tell a friend about the show. And we'll see you next time, folks.
Bye.